In the early 17th century, a crippled, graying, almost toothless veteran of Spain's wars against the Ottoman Empire published a book. That book, Don Quixote, went on to sell more copies than any other book beside the Bible, making its author, Miguel de Cervantes, the single most read author in human history. Cervantes did more than just publish a bestseller, though. He invented a way of writing. William Eggington's new book is about how Cervantes came to create what we now call fiction, and how fiction changed the world. The title of the book is The Man Who Invented Fiction. William Eggington is the Andrew W. Mellon Professor in the Humanities and a professor of German and Romance languages and literatures at the Johns Hopkins University. And we welcome William Eggington to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joe.
What brought you to this particular subject and wanting to look at Cervantes?
Well, it's been many, many years that I've been teaching Cervantes's his books at the college level, first at the University of Buffalo and then more recently at the Johns Hopkins University. And as we were coming on to the 400th anniversary of his death, which is this year, I was about 4 years back, published a piece in the New York Times in the Opinionator section about the relevance of Cervantes' style of fiction to our lives today. And an agent got in touch with me, and we started talking, and he said, you know, this is a great story, the story of Cervantes' life and what he did and what was so impactful about what he did and how important it is for the way we think and write and everything today. He said, give this a shot. So out of that, and 3 years, 4 years later, comes The Man Who Invented Fiction.
When did you come to that idea that this was the man who invented fiction?
I think it's something that developed slowly over a long period of time. You know, the critical tradition for the last 400 years has really achieved a consensus that he invented something called the modern novel. And I guess I, in many of my courses, have been asking the question, well, what exactly do we mean when we say the modern novel? The novel's a genre. It's something that you kind of recognize by the heft of it, or it's longer than a novella, but it can be very, very long or not so long, and it's in prose in general, and there's a lot of shifting perspectives in it. Other than that, you know, what exactly are we talking about? And as I delved into this often with graduate students or undergraduates over the years, bit by bit, it began to occur to me that it wasn't so much about a genre that he invented. In fact, he was using genres that existed at the time, and in fact, he was using all of them. What was really new was his attitude towards reality, that he was creating a way of talking about reality that made the reader divide himself in two. The reader would have to both be someone who was taking very seriously what was going on, really kind of believing in it, investing in it, at the same time being perfectly aware that this is not something to take literally. And that division of the reader was something that was new at the time.
And is it Don Quixote that best examples that, is the best example of what you just mentioned?
That's right. Not only is it kind of the first full-blown, in the historical sense, example of what we now come to acknowledge and to recognize and to desire when we read fiction, it is also continues to be the best example. I think, as Harold Bloom once wrote, this is the novel that all others follow in its wake. Everyone has been trying to outdo Don Quixote since it was first written. Everyone is influenced by it, and in some ways, it will never be surpassed.
Give us a sense of where Cervantes was in his life when he came to write this story and this convergence that happened to allow him to tell this extraordinary story.
And it's an extraordinary story in and of itself, and that's what I really tried to get to in this book. It was late in his life, and he tried so many other things in the meantime. He was an adventurer, a soldier, a warrior. He was almost killed in a war between the Spanish and the Turks in the Mediterranean. Barely survived that, and after several more years of pursuing a life as a soldier in Italy, made his way back to Spain. Only to be captured by Barbary pirates on the way. He spent 5 years in really dreadful captivity in northern Africa, engineering a number of escape attempts, none of which were successful, before eventually being ransomed almost by accident and then returning to Spain. He would have thought his life would have gotten better then, but in fact it was another 20 years of disappointments, difficulties, scraping together jobs, unpopular jobs, working as a tax collector, as a requisitioner for the Spanish Armada. going into towns and taking away, or trying to take away, their grain to give them to the Spanish crown, precisely at a time when people were just hungry and didn't want anything like that. And he ended up being put in jail on several occasions, always on trumped up charges. This was a life of deep and abiding disappointment, at the end of which, still penniless, in debt, he sat down and he started to write something he'd always wanted to do. And he'd been, obviously we know this, he'd been writing as well, poetry. When he came back from Spain, he took a shot at being a theater writer, playwright. He had published a first novel in around in the early 1580s that was a pastoral romance. He'd taken shots at it, but never to enormous success. 1605, he publishes this novel that he's clearly been working on for some time, and it threw the literary world into a tizzy. It was an immediate and international success. He didn't become rich from it, and he reflects on that for the next 10 years of his life, which is more or less what he lived, during which he was extraordinarily productive in every possible different genre, including, most importantly, the second part of the novel. So the novel has two parts now, the 1605 and 1615, the year before he died. Those two together form the about 1,000 pages that we now refer to as Don Quixote.
So talk a little bit about that second part and how it reflects on the first and the differences we see in that creative 9 years.
Well, it's an extraordinary moment because, you know, you can imagine this. He's getting towards 10 years out from having written the first one, a great success. His publisher is saying, you know, Miguel, where's that second volume? And he's saying, yeah, but I've got all these other things, and but it's coming. Don't worry, it's coming. And then about 8 years after the publication of the first, lo and behold, someone else publishes a continuation of the stories of Don Quixote and Sancho Panza. And this drives Miguel de Cervantes absolutely crazy. He obviously sits down, you know, lights a fire under him, as it were, and he pumps out the second volume, the second novel. And it's a doozy. One of the most important things he does in it is he incorporates what's happened in the world since the 1605, including the plagiarism of his work, into the novel. So these fictional characters are running around in a world that's obviously very real and treating other characters, for example, the author of this apocryphal Don Quixote, and the characters themselves, as if they were out there too, commenting on them, ridiculing them. It was a work of absolute genius, but it was also part of making those different layers and that extremely subtle slicing of characters and of interior depth that we now expect when we read modern fiction.
And it is this understanding of the time that he was living in that gave it such depth and I assume allowed so many to look at it as a masterpiece and to propel others to write in a similar vein.
Well, in part, remember when I was talking about all these disappointments, this was a time where the Spanish Empire was overreaching, was stretching around the world, and Cervantes was a young man. As a young man, was buying into all of these ideas that were being propagated by the regime. This is the one true religion. We're the greatest nation. We're going to spread our might around the world. And indeed, he went and he fought, and he almost lost his life, and in fact became a cripple as a result of it. Years and years of disappointment. Years and years of seeing, for example, ethnic minorities being scapegoated due to the propagation of this almost fanatical religion of blood purity in Spain, bit by bit led him to understand that everyone was living in this kind of giant media bubble, in a way, to put it in very modern terms. So what he ended up writing was not just very rich and funny descriptions of people, but writing rich and funny descriptions of how people were seeing the world and how the way they were seeing the world was in fact being manipulated and how they were getting the world wrong, and then counterposing those different takes on the world with each other. And that's that the complexity of that game that he was able to play is in part what created what we would call real feeling characters. Why? Because when we read a book or watch a movie, what convinces us that a character is real is that a character isn't just an objective description. It's someone who you can slip into, if you will, like a mask that you can get behind and see out of. But of course, part of seeing out of the eyes of someone else are all the limitations of what that person sees or doesn't see. And so Cervantes was always writing in part about what people saw, but also about what they didn't see, about what they felt and what they couldn't feel. And the result was this rich, extraordinary world of empathy and of limited characters who could reach out and love each other, if you will, also because of the limitations that they recognized in each other.
And his suffering is so much a part of the story, isn't it?
It really is. He suffered deeply, and not only physically, but of course, as I've said all along in this conversation, he suffered emotionally as well. He suffered great losses, loneliness, missing his family, and these rich, rich emotions, always tempered with humor, some irony, but it's always real human emotions at the basis of everything that he writes about.
When you look at it today and you teach it, what is the feedback that you get in the contemporary nature of it?
It's an amazing thing. You know, we were celebrating the 400th anniversary this year, and by historical circumstance, happenstance, they almost died on the same day of the death of the two greatest authors in the Western tradition, Shakespeare being the other one. And Shakespeare, you know, we in the United States and in the English-speaking world, we study him in high school and onward, and it's there's very few reading experiences like reading Shakespeare. But it's also a struggle. We have to learn to adapt ourselves to the world that Shakespeare is, to the language of Shakespeare. For someone reading Cervantes in his own language, but also in very good translations like Edith Grossman's translation that I also refer to in the book, this language is extremely contemporary. It's very real. It's rich. It's exciting. But it's the prose that you live in a day-to-day experience. The language hasn't dated itself. So one thing that my students always say, and when we teach, for example, great books at Hopkins, this is a book that over and over again is repeatedly cited by, you know, almost unanimously as the greatest experience for the students reading it, is just how incredibly present everything feels, this world. Of course, you know, in addition with good notes that explain some of the local references that you might not otherwise understand is important, but those are in essence few and far between compared with just how real and relevant everything else feels.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the book, and I'm hoping we can end on this and just talk a little bit about, because when we think of Cervantes, we think of Don Quixote, but when you look at other writing by Cervantes, that is fascinating. What is lost, do you think?
You know, so much, and really was, you go back to one of your first questions, why I wrote this book, that was another reason behind it. Explain or do my best to convey to an American readership who, for the most part, if they know of Cervantes, it's because of the one great book, how that's just the tip of the iceberg. He wrote so much more. As I said in an earlier answer to one of your questions, he was dabbling in all of the genres. He was a poet, but he was also a playwright. That was extremely important for him. And he wrote short stories, brilliant short stories. They exist in two volumes that one can read today. The translations aren't the most up-to-date, and hopefully we'll be working on that and getting more new and up-to-date translations of Cervantes' other works out. But this is an author with an extraordinary productivity, especially during 1605 when Don Quixote came out in 1616 when he died, nonstop. That's what he was doing, was writing all the time. Another great novel, big novel, that we're in fact celebrating, was published posthumously, so this year will also, in addition to recognizing the 400th anniversary of his death, will also be recognizing the 400th anniversary of the publication of his last great novel, The Trials of Persiles in Segismunda. And this is a novel, for example, that really needs a new critical appreciation. In fact, it's getting it among scholars, but I think the public needs to come back to this one as well.
William Eginton's new book is The Man Who Invented Fiction, How Cervantes Ushered in the Modern World. The book is published by Bloomsbury. Bill, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Joe, it was for me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Man Who Invented Fiction by William Eginton. It is published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.